The King County Sheriff's Office says it's reducing staffing in its north and southeast precinct. The move comes as the department faces budget constraints. Affected communities include Redmond Ridge, Fairwood, Falls City, and other areas in unincorporated King County.
Oh, well, I guess frills, unnecessary bonuses, and garnishments to budget priorities, you know, things like your protection, things like the safety of your neighborhood. I guess those things have to go without because King County says they need more money. This is what you just heard, reading between the lines, is this is an attempt to try and get Olympia to allow them to raise your property taxes. Welcome, everybody. That's one of the things we love to do, read between the lines on the John Carlson Show. It is 4 minutes after 6 o'clock. The John Carlson Show coming to you every day of the work week from 6 to 9 a.m. And pleased to announce that we are now in day 4 of what will be, is it now official? It's a 6-week contest, young Zach?
I'm not exactly sure how long it runs.
Sounds pretty close, but yeah.
I know it goes over a month.
Yeah.
But here's the deal. Every day for more than a month, this station will be giving away $2,025 every day. Every day, someone who is a lucky KVI listener or a listener of one of our other companion Lotus stations.
And I believe this to be Monday through Friday when you say every day.
Yeah, every day of the work week.
Yeah, work week, yeah.
Will be able to enter a contest to get $2,025, and all you have to, it doesn't cost anything to enter, and no, you don't have to put in a bunch of biographical material, information. All you need to do is text a word to our regular text line. It's a simple one-syllable word that I give you at 8 a.m., and you have a full hour to enter the word. You know, it's not like this is a race. It's not like, 10th caller right now. No, it's... have a full hour, almost a full hour, from 8 to 9 a.m., and you text the word to our regular text in line, and you're automatically entered. So this is good news, and in a little less than 2 hours, I'll give you the word of the morning, all right? And you can enter the contest, just that simple. All right, boy, oh boy, do we have a lot of fun stuff to talk about. I want to start by talking about an issue that you may not have heard of yet, but it is an eye-opener. And again, it just shows how times are changing for the better in this country. Now, many of you are familiar with the pipeline that was called the Dakota Access Oil Pipeline. It was being built to move crude oil 1,100 miles from North Dakota to a pipeline hub in Illinois. It's over $3.5 billion for this oil pipeline. And the political left started a campaign to stop the pipeline. And, you know, nothing wrong with people who differ with you, who are protesting. Only these protests went over the line of free speech. They involved attacks and vandalism of company property, sometimes even attacks on employees. It involved making a series of claims that were demonstrably false, but they just lied away without abandon because, oh, it's free speech. And if we're demonizing your company, you know, by saying that you weren't talking to the local Indian tribes, you weren't communicating with the Standing Rock Sioux tribe, that you're trying to build your pipeline on sacred grounds, that the pipeline poses a pollution risk to the tribe's water supply. All these things were BS, but they kept saying it anyway. Well, the good news is that the pipeline eventually did get constructed, but it involved a delay of several years, and it cost the company, they estimated, $300 million. And the company, instead of just having to suck it up and say, well, that's the way it goes, turned around and sued Greenpeace. Greenpeace played a major role in drawing public attention, which, again, you can draw public attention to something you care about, but what you can't do is construct a campaign based on lies. Again, you have the right to the First Amendment invariably protects your right to lie, but it doesn't prevent you from being held accountable for the damage done by your prevarications, by your lies. In other words, you have the right to speak. You have the responsibility to not defame or damage or aggressively call on violence your opponents, against your opponents. So this case went to trial in North Dakota, and a jury came back, just awarded the pipeline company, Energy Transfer, $660 million. Repeat, Greenpeace, which is an international company with deep pockets, environmentalists tend to be very wealthy, just got hit with a $660 million damage verdict. Greenpeace says this is an attack on the First Amendment, but it's not an attack on the First Amendment. Nobody is preventing Greenpeace from participating in this campaign against Energy Transfer. But if they can prove conclusively in court that Greenpeace participated in a campaign of lies and defamation that damaged the company, then the company can collect damages if they can convince a jury that that is what happened. And they did. The cost of construction was raised by $300 million. The jury found the company's argument so persuasive, they raised the verdict. So this was a case of, you know, where Energy Transfer said that Greenpeace lied about the company's work in order to solicit donations, which the company says it used to organize and fund protests that crossed the line into violence against property, against equipment, and against employees. Quote, everybody is afraid of these environmental groups and the fear that it may look wrong if you fight back with these people. But what they did to us is wrong, and they're going to pay for it, said Energy Transfer co-founder Kelsey Warren. This is not a usual tactic by corporations against anti-business, anti-corporate, anti-free enterprise leftists. But a lot of these groups have deep pockets. They have money. And these companies now can make them pay if they can show that their speech amounted to a campaign of lies, distortion, and defamation that resulted in damage to the corporation. Of course, some professors of journalism and political activism and the like and law are dismayed. Josh Galperin said the number, meaning the 660,000, see, wrong professor, it was Michael Berger, who is the executive director of the Sabin Center for Climate Change Law at Columbia University, said the jury's decision, meaning its $660 million verdict, was even higher. The number is just astounding. One way or another, the effect of a verdict like this without question could be to chill speech, to make opponents more reluctant to be vocal in their opposition to major projects, close quote. That's unadulterated BS. What it says is you will be held accountable when you defame, when you slander, when you lie about your opponents and it ends up hurting them financially. That's all this verdict says. And boy, oh boy, is it long overdue. And are we going to see a change as a result of this? Oh, I hope so. Companies, instead of just having to absorb all of this damage, can now fight back and they can win. It can be lucrative to go after people who are out to defame and ruin you. How about that? Oh, we have a lot of stuff we're talking about on the John Carlson Show today. We have, you know, the president's showdown with these unelected federal district court judges, of which there are over 600, and they don't like various aspects of what Donald Trump is doing, so they hand out these decisions and say, and this applies across the country. The political left says that Donald Trump fighting against these judges threatens democracy, threatens our constitutional process. Being the political left, they've got things not only wrong, but they've got things backwards. The real constitutional crisis is the idea that a federal district court judge can be making national policy. The most outrageous example being a judge in Washington, D.C., who not only said that Donald Trump could no longer carry out deportations, but that the planes carrying gang members of the notorious Trendy Aragua?
This is a Costanza moment for you. Whatever your impulse is, it ends up being the wrong one. Aragua. Like, Trendy. Agua is water. Agua is water in Spanish.
Okay.
So, Aragua.
Aragua.
In this case, I don't know what Aragua is in Venezuela.
I think it means mean and violent, because that's what these guys are. I'm just going to say TDA from now
TDA,
on.
TDA, right?
Okay?
Yeah,
TDA.
That's the other acronym, right?
But so he said from the bench, not even in his written order, he said, if there's any planes in the air, I want them brought back. I want these people returned to the United States. And by the way, they weren't returned to the United States. And now they're saying, oh, this threatens democracy. No, no, that judge and judges like him, they are the threats to democracy. And we'll get into that in a lot more detail this morning on the John Carlson Show. Also, the JFK assassination files are released, as Donald Trump promised he was going to do. He said, I'm going to release the files on the assassinations of John F. Kennedy, of Bobby Kennedy, and Martin Luther King. So what are we learning? Well, I will share that with you a little later on in the commute with Carlson. Also, Columbia University stands to lose $400 million by refusing to clamp down on anti-Semitic activities and protests on their campus, creating a hostile environment for Jewish students. We'll tell you what Columbia's response has been to the Trump administration threatening to withhold and not release $400 million. Again, the political left is finally being held accountable for their disreputable and disgraceful behavior. This is a long time in coming, and boy, does it feel good. You are listening to the radio program of record this Thursday morning, first day of spring, on the commute with Carlson. Talk Radio 570 KVI. Philip J. Vandervoort III right around the corner with the social media sweep. It is 6:21. Good morning, as opposed to Pleasant John here. Talk Radio 570 KVI. Here is Philip J. Vandervoort III with the morning's first social media sweep.
Yeah, the Department of Defense ended up doing something yesterday that they ended up reversing themselves on a little bit later yesterday. The social media sweep, sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. It was all couched as kind of the DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion purge. But the Department of Defense had pulled down a website that explains the history of Jackie Robinson when he was serving in the military in 1944, refusing to go to the back of a bus on a military base, ordered by a white bus driver to go to the back of a military base. The DOD pulled the web page explaining the history of Jackie Robinson refusing to go to the back of the bus. This was 10 years before Rosa Parks refused to do so as well after the Brown versus Board of Education
ruling.
So
was this before or after he started playing Major League Baseball?
Oh, this was in 1944.
Okay,
when he was serving.
I
brought up this story before on the show and
he may
explained
been,
the history of it.
But with the Kansas City Monarchs, which were the old Negro leagues before Major League.
Yeah,
Baseball.
But this all revolves around Jackie Robinson's World military
War II.
Service.
Okay.
Department of Defense ended up pulling this page down, and then the word started to get out. They ended up restoring this. And ultimately, Jackie Robinson was brought
idea.
Up on a court-martial but acquitted for refusing to go to the back of the bus. But the problem for what the Department of Defense tried to do yesterday in lumping all this in with DEI is that Robinson's refusal to sit at the back of the bus while serving the Army in 1944 was about equality, not equity.
Correct.
And that's what the DEI equity has, the E in equity of DEI has been.
Correct.
So it's
again.
Good that these numbskulls who decided to remove this have acknowledged the mistake they made and have restored the information.
That's a perfect example of people doing the wrong thing.
Right, yeah.
Because maybe they were just following some sort of an algorithm that, you know, singled out by race or something,
yeah.
But it was a dumb move.
Yep.
that Jackie Robinson did was all about treating people equally.
Yeah, yeah.
The DEIE, equity, right, means you treat people differently because of race, right, in the name of social justice. And that is divisive, and that is discriminatory and unconstitutional.
Yeah, one of the social media handles I follow is called PDX Real, so Portland-related news. And it talks about how people are leaving the city of Portland specifically, moving out. And PDX Real handle posts that Austin, Texas's metro area has now passed Portland's metro as the 25th largest by population in the nation. At this pace, Oregon will lose a House representative when another reapportionment happens, wow, in 2030. And they write Idaho would gain what Oregon potentially could be losing.
That's good.
They say California is set to lose four,
nice,
U.S. House of Representative positions. Texas and Florida have gained over a million people in population last year. They would gain what California would be losing. So there's a little bit of the...
think about this, folks.
Map for Trump politics there.
Think about this. The West Coast of the United States, some of the most beautiful land in the world.
Yeah.
Beautiful land in the world, and yet they are losing population in Oregon. They are
California.
Losing population in California. California is losing the most beautiful state, the Golden State.
Right. Yeah.
Is losing more population than any other state in the country. Think about that.
And the simple answer is because the lawmakers in Oregon, like the lawmakers in Washington and California, they've made it untenable to live there.
Politicians have screwed up entire, yeah, metropolitan areas containing, you know, tens of millions of people in Oregon and California, and again, made it untenable, and people are leaving. Yeah. Wow.
One more quick one here. Yeah. The Babylon Bee has gotten a hold of the SpaceX return of the astronauts to the Gulf of America.
Yes.
And they write, Democrats, activists begin spray painting swastikas on dolphins after the SpaceX splashdown and the dolphins were swimming around the capsule trying to figure out what happened. And somebody else added, uh-oh, breaking news. Leftist activist incinerated attempting to paint swastika on SpaceX Starship at launch.
Yeah, that didn't work out well.
Bad timing.
Yes. It is 6:30, the commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. We bring it home local. Several really interesting stories happening around here you need to know about. 24 minutes. It's 7 o'clock in the morning, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Thank you very much for being with me this morning. Let's bring it home local. A couple of very interesting stories that deserve your attention. The King County Sheriff's Department is cutting back on policing. Two Eastside precincts, the area around Redmond called Redmond Ridge and in Renton, they are cutting back patrols to avoid paying deputies overtime. Como 4's Karina Vargas spoke to the King County Undersheriff about this issue.
Certain neighborhoods in unincorporated King County will see less deputies respond to incidents because of the reduced staffing. Redmond Ridge is one area that will be impacted. The King County Sheriff's Office said the change means for burglaries, they will only be dispatched to alarms verified by alarm companies that have video or audio evidence. But when it comes to violent crimes like homicides, sexual assault, and robberies, those are still their main priorities.
For violent crimes, absolutely, we'll be responding. So any life safety type of calls, we will be going.
The sheriff's office says for the past few years, they've been facing budget reductions. Officials say deputies are not losing their jobs. They're just cutting back on hours of overtime.
We hate doing this, right? This is horrible. This is budget management 101. We know how much we have. We have to project that out throughout the years.
Officials also say 911 calls involving non-injury crashes will be directed to Washington State Patrol, but they will respond to crashes involving hit and runs or impaired drivers. Now, officials say that this is just the first phase and that if needed, they will reduce more staffing, not just in patrols, but also for their investigative and special units.
I see. Which means that all these things, burglaries, car crashes, robberies, those things are afterthoughts. Those things are frills. Those things are, well, we'll get to that, but we've got all these other budget priorities that we've got to deal with. Okay, let's make something really abundantly clear from the outset. The first priority of a national government, any nation's government, is to protect their shores, protect their borders from outside threats. The first priority of local governments is to protect their residents from threats within the community. That's how it's supposed to work. And you have city police departments that are responsible for responding to problems in the city or, you know, town. And you have county government responsible for responding to threats in what are called unincorporated areas of the county or in cities that have contracted, that have signed a contract with King County to provide police protection. They do. Burien, the city of Burien, is a good example of that. So what King County is now saying is, yeah, our residents are who already have long wait times are simply going to have to wait longer. And if it's not really a dire matter, okay, if no one's bleeding, then it's a secondary priority and we probably won't be able to get to it. If it's on the highway, we'll just farm it off to the Washington State Patrol. If it's not a burglary involving a lot of money, then, you know, we're not going to get out there anytime soon. What this means, bluntly put, is that the first priority of any local government has, when it comes to King County Sheriff's Office, become a back burner priority, a second or third priority. They've got it upside down. This is how the political left function. They do everything they want to do first, and the important stuff, well, they're told, well, look, I mean, yeah, we'll get out there for a murder, and, if there's a rape, we'll get out there for that. But if it's anything less, like I said, if no one's bleeding, if it's anything less than a dire situation, it can wait. Is that what you think the county's priority should be? This is the problem we have in King County. This is the county that while we were in the midst of an explosion in violent juvenile crime, you still had your county executive, Dow Constantine, calling for the closure of the newly opened $250 million juvenile justice center. It is a county that, again, as juvenile crime has exploded out of control directly as a result of their alternative diversion-focused restoration model for addressing juvenile crime, which is basically don't punish it, that Dan Satterberg self-righteously was saying will be the national model. We don't put children in cages, et cetera, et cetera. It has failed catastrophically. And, you know, all right, most things that the political left does are catastrophic failures. Look at how they've dealt with drugs, thousands dead. Look how they've dealt with homeless. The problem's grown exponentially worse. And look how they have dealt with crime. So this is just another reason why these elections, these county elections coming up, matter so much. And we'll get into it a little bit later, but other levels of government are equally dysfunctional when it comes, you know, I'm thinking specifically about the latest cost overruns we're hearing from Sound Transit and the Seattle Public Schools. Oh, yeah. The Seattle School District, in the name of equity, got rid of its gifted student program and then bragged about it. You know, look what we're doing. We are moving because there weren't enough Black and Hispanic kids in the gifted school student program. The solution was to eliminate the gifted student program and have all the gifted kids work at grade level. This is DEI in action. This is a perfect example of what equity means. Everybody's equal. And if And if that means kids don't excel because they are excellent, too bad. We'll tell you how that worked in the Seattle School District. Oh, I think you have a pretty good idea. It is coming up here on 47 minutes after 6 o'clock in the morning. It's the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Good morning. It's 9 minutes to 7 o'clock in the morning. The John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. A reminder, in a little more than an hour, I'm going to give you the secret word of the morning so you can enter our daily cash giveaway contest, the Golden Age giveaway. So simple. When I give you that word, just text it to our regular text-in line, and you are entered into a daily drawing for $2,025.
All right. John.
Yes, Lars Larson. No, you can't play. You're an employee. Employees and their spouses may not enter the contest.
I want to, though. Well, no, I don't want to. I want to give everybody else a chance. How are you?
I'm doing well, and I wanted to see if you had been looking through any of those new files, the just-released JFK assassination files.
I have, and I'll bet you have as well. Yes. We're all curious about, and then you have to sort out things we already knew and things that add to what we already knew, and where does it take us? And I think it takes us to some extent back to some of my favorite theories, and that is that the CIA played a role in this.
In what way do you think that happened?
Well, the CIA, either through malfeasance or through direct involvement, but consider this. Was Lee Harvey Oswald the shooter? We don't know, and I don't know that we'll ever prove it. I think, you know, but the Warren Commission with the magic bullet and all the rest of that was not trustworthy at all. And so I understand they created the conditions for a multi-decade conspiracy theory, because when they say, well, this bullet went in and then it zigged and then it zagged and then it did this other thing. And then you've got Oswald, who's traveled to Russia. He inquired about becoming a Russian citizen.
And Cuba.
Went to Russia. According to the Russians, at a firing range, he was a terrible shot. According to the Marines, he was a good shot when he was in the Marines. And he pulled off three, you know, shots from a bolt-action rifle from a window. And the distance wasn't the big deal. That's not a long shot with a good rifle. But pulling off three from a bolt-action rifle in that space of time opened up and the fact that the Warren Commission had the magic bullet that zigged and zagged and went through, what is it?
You know, they actually had a team of experts that was assembled by the Discovery Channel recreate the assassination and said, yeah, this could happen. Had to have been a lucky shot, but yeah, this is plausible.
Why is it that Oswald was under surveillance by the CIA? Well, traveling to Russia and Cuba would probably do that.
Yeah.
But then why didn't they know, you know, what he was up to and what he was planning?
Well, I mean, his wife didn't know what he was up to.
No, that's true.
So, you know, when he was carrying a box in the back seat of his car, and then was bringing it up to the depository, and people said, "What's that, Lee?" And he said, "Oh, curtain rods." but in other words, he was seen heading into the building carrying what most likely was the rifle, and he certainly acted like someone who's guilty. He shot a cop.
that's true.
Who approached him? So my own take is, there's a lot of funny stuff that was happening around the fringes, and we kept hearing about, you know, another gunman and, you know, an echo. You know, people heard, you know, I thought I heard a shot coming from behind. No, not from in front. Anyway, I think what it all gets down to, I think he was a communist who despised JFK because the United States tried to overthrow the communist regime in Cuba.
True.
And he shot the president.
Yeah. And I'm not saying that isn't the most likely scenario. I'm just saying they could have buttoned up a lot of the details a lot better, including, as I understand, the bullet that is on file as the bullet that killed Kennedy appears to have almost no marks on it at all. And, John, I've killed deer. I've killed elk. I use a small caliber bullet in most cases, a 270 caliber bullet. And there's a lot of damage that happens to bullets when they when they hit an animal, especially if they hit bone. And in this case, you had a bullet that ricocheted all over the place and appeared to be like it came from the store.
Our good buddy Lars Larson, he's going to be talking about this and other issues as he does every day of the work week from noon to 3. Don't miss him. That's Lars Larson. It is now 6:56 on the John Carlson Show. Hour number 2 of the commute and our 7 o'clock headlines right in front of you. Welcome back. Hour number 2 of the John Carlson Show. Talk radio 570 KVI. You got 4 minutes after 7 o'clock in the morning. It is the first day of spring, 20th day of March. And as Philip J. Vandenberg III loves to say, it's Friday Eve on the John Carlson Show. Okay.
I'll take that.
I want to run this quick soundbite by Bill Maher, who on his show, this was last Friday, he had a couple of Democrats on his show. As you know, Bill Maher himself is a liberal, is a Democrat, but he's anti-woke and he's anti-bureaucracy. And he's getting increasingly impatient with the Democratic Party for, as he says, just blowing it time after time after time. They're too extreme. And he made this claim about the Department of Education. Now, it used to be, well, you can't reduce funding for the Federal Department of Education because if you reduce funding for the Department of Education, it looks like you're anti-education. Obviously, you can't do that. Bill Maher says, you know what? Why not?
What does the panel think of the Trump administration gutting and potentially eliminating the Department of Education? I'm still thinking about it, honestly.
All right, you take this one.
here's what I care about.
Okay, first of all, right off the bat, instead of diving in and say, oh, you're so wrong, Bill, there's this sense of exasperation saying to Governor Shapiro, you take this one. Because guess what? Defending the Department of Education and how it's done its job isn't so easy anymore. So here's what Governor Shapiro had to say.
Needs. I've got kids who are coming from poor families who rely on this funding from the federal government to have a shot in life. I said before, I want every child of God to have the freedom to chart their own course, the opportunity to succeed. The federal government made a compact with those kids. I hope they don't break that compact with those kids.
I guess what the question, though, really is the Department of Education doing that? Is it now? They probably are doing some good work. I'm sure they are. What is their budget? Like $200 billion or something? But it also looks like some of these places are just funneling money to people who are not solving the problem. I mean, I saw that story about the $20 billion that went out the door after Biden lost the EPA. It wasn't the EPA, or was it the EPA? But so there was $20 billion that they shoveled to groups because Trump was coming and then they were going to reverse right. All this stuff. And the supposedly environmental groups, and they were not really environmental groups, and they had no experience in doing it. Like I said before, I care about the plastics. Do I think this money was going to get rid of the plastics in my brain? I do not. So I am skeptical of the Department of Education. Yeah. And I think every Democrat who runs really needs to take on this issue because that's your portfolio, education. You've owned it, and the results aren't good.
No. Bill Maher hits every single point, every single target. He hits it bullseye. The Democrats have owned the education issue, and the results aren't good. It is quick history lesson here. The Department of Education was created in 1979. There, of course, the federal government had been doing some, you know, education spending for this or that, but they put it all under one roof. Did the Carter administration create the Federal Department of Education at the behest of parents groups? No. Well, did they do it at the behest of, say, the Association of School Principals throughout America? No. Well, did they create the Federal Department of Education because of school boards? No. Well, wait a minute. Okay, how about governors? Was it because the governors of the vast majority of the 50 states said, we need a federal Department of Education? No. The Federal Department of Education was created as a payoff to the National Education Association, which is not an association. It's just a union. It was the teachers' union, the largest teachers' union in America. They supported Jimmy Carter when he ran, It was the first time they ever endorsed anyone for president. And their top priority as a union was getting a federal Department of Education. Get this. As the Wall Street Journal recalled in a recent editorial, when Jimmy Carter signed the bill creating the Department of Education, he said that doing so, quote, would eliminate unnecessary bureaucracy, cut red tape, promote better service for local schools, and even, quote, save tax dollars, close quote. He said that with a straight face. All you need to do is look at the results of the Federal Department of Education. Are schools better? Is there less bureaucracy? Let's look at it from a completely different vantage point. When people are not pleased with their kids' school and they want things to get better, do they go to a local school board meeting or do they call Washington, D.C.? Exactly. Education is a local issue. There is no reason for federal bureaucrats to be involved in education. If there are programs for, let's say, special needs kids and the federal government wants to assist, then go ahead and send block grant and send the money. But we don't need federal strings attached. We don't need federal strings. Federal strings is federal bureaucracy. We don't need any of that. And so right now, basically, it's the Federal Department of Education, which has presided for the last 45 years over a system where last year, one-third of the nation's eighth graders scored below basic scores on reading tests. Not grade level, just basic. This ought to give you the idea that, you know what, it was a mistake to ever put more money and more authority in the hands of Washington, D.C. if you wanted better schools. Now, that doesn't mean that things are always going to get better, because if you have woke policies at the local level, like you have at the federal level, you're going to get miserable results, because woke policies, progressive, left-wing education ideas work just as bad in education as woke progressive policies work in every other realm of life. Perfect example, Danny Westneat's column in the Seattle Times today. I mentioned this earlier in the hour. A little more detail for you here. A teacher at a local school, Hamilton Middle School, said that 8 years ago, the school had six classes of middle school students taking geometry, which I remember taking when I was a sophomore in high school. It's a high school course. One of the classes was even taking advanced algebra, which is for high school juniors. So that's like 150 middle school kids in one school taking advanced math. That's impressive. That was 8 years ago. Then the progressives got involved and made not excellence, but equity the major priority in school. What's the result? According to school teacher David Evans, he told Westneat, well, now instead of six classes, we have one section of geometry. He says a lot of the other students have just, if you want those things, you have to go to other places for them. The Seattle School District went out of its way not to ask parents who were leaving the school district why. But a lot of parents who did leave, when they finally were asked, said that their concerns were the curriculum. Families, quote, who disenrolled their students overwhelmingly cited concerns about the quality of education and the curriculum. What's more, a majority of adults of current students have also considered disenrolling their kids over concerns about quality. The education establishment, the activists, the unions said, oh, no, parents are leaving the schools because of the high cost of housing. It was BS. They knew it. The cost of housing was cited by 3% of parents who were leaving the schools. This example was cited by Westneat. Washington Middle School, another middle school, Washington Middle School, had its gifted student program canceled in 2020. One of the progressive school board members at the time, Zachary DeWolf, who was basically just a political activist who got elected to the school board, said that the headline should be, Seattle Public Schools have voted to desegregate a middle school in the Central District. At that time, the school had 669 students. 60% were students of color. Today, it doesn't have 669. It has 557. Doesn't have 60% students of color. It has almost 80% students of color. So you've got, after 6 years of progressive policies and doing away with the gifted program, you've got a smaller school and a less racially mixed school. The enrollment of in that school of Asian and white kids has dropped in half. If you want the best for your kid, why would you keep them in a school that is going out of its way not to allow them to excel? Asian enrollment in the Seattle Public Schools has dropped 17% in 5 years. Oh, and by the way, after doing away with the school gifted program, did that help kids learn better since everyone's in one classroom together? No. No improvement in academic outcomes for any group of students. Parents say some schools took the equity drive so far as to effectively ban lessons above grade level. So if you've got a really smart kid, a gifted kid, a motivated student, they can only proceed at that pace, grade level. They're not going to be motivated for long, are they? So now, supposedly, the schools are beginning to change their tune. And, you know, we'll see. They say, well, we're gonna keep a gifted school student program going and then try and make it diverse while proving that you can have both gifted programs and regular kids in each neighborhood school. We'll see. Again, the bias, and it's all driven by this mania about race. Again, equity is not an extension of civil rights. It's an inversion of civil rights. Instead of playing down the significance of someone's race, they magnify it, sometimes fixate on it. And the result was getting rid of the gifted program, which got rid of a lot of students, which lowered the district's funding because funding is attached to the child. Yet one more example of how a man-made program, man-made approach to education ends up screwing up education and leaving everyone worse off. Just like the progressive approach, as I was saying earlier, to drugs means more dead people from overdose and more drugs and more problems associated with drug culture. It means dramatically more crime. It means more disorder and dysfunction. So when liberals say, you know, yeah, we have the majority, our policies are prevailing. Okay, how are they working? Did you want to address that issue? How are they actually working? And if they're not, then why aren't you changing the policies? And if you won't change the policies, it's time to change you. Time to get people in there who know what they're doing. You got 22 minutes after 7 o'clock on The Commute with Carlson. Talk Radio 570 KVI. Philip J. Vandenberg III right around the corner of the social media sweep. All right. Philip J. Vandenberg III, what do you got going on this morning on the social media sweep?
Well, initiative sponsor and organizer of Let's Go Washington, Brian Haywood, has got the receipts on Democrats in the Olympia legislature, the social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. You know, so much of this revolves around what you talked to Brian Haywood about a couple days ago on the show. It's a House bill, number 1296, seeks to water down Initiative 2081 that was signed by so many Washington voters, approved by the Secretary of State's office, and then ultimately enacted without a vote of the people by the state legislature. But now those Democrats that enacted it are trying to water it down. Brian Haywood posts, why do Democrats believe that schools should be able to selectively keep secrets from parents? And then in their own legislation, they note that scientific studies have found that brain development impacting the decision-making process of young people doesn't really come to be fully formed until you're about age 25. So somewhere in your young 20s. And they apply that when it comes to trying an 18-year-old or a 17-year-old or a 16-year-old for adult court versus juvenile court in a crime. So the Democrats will say, well, you know, you really can't hold a juvenile responsible. Their brain isn't fully formed and they're
why they're trying
until
to
they're 20, 25,
even
right?
Even trying to confine adults, young adults with younger juvenile offenders at Green Hill.
But then conversely, they'll say, hey, a 13-year-old is totally mentally mature enough to make all their own medical decisions, anything related to gender surgery, gender identity, abortion, without any knowledge or input whatsoever from the parents.
Right.
And we've kind of talked about that on previous shows. But another instructive reminder as the Senate is now in the middle of pushing forward on what has already passed the House, House Bill 1296. So would water down Initiative 2081, that parental notification, parental Bill of Rights.
Again, if they do that, because this was essentially a dirty trick by the legislature, they didn't want it on the ballot. They knew it would become law. So they said, okay, we'll make it law. So 1 year ago, they voted to make the initiative law.
Right. Adopted it themselves.
Year, okay. The election's over. We have a majority in the legislature. Let's just dismantle what we created last year. And let's wait till the last minute of session so it'll be harder for there to be a ballot measure to strip it. So my advice to Brian is just right now, rerun the initiative. In fact, strengthen it. Make it tougher.
Yeah.
More protections for parents, and regardless of what Olympia does. Yeah,
but it shows you that manipulation of Democrats cognitive development in one aspect and then forsaking that in another. Now, I got to give a disclaimer. This one I came across not on social media, but I ended up here as a result of some other things that I came across on social media. And it's a climate scientist with a master's in climate science, a woman named Kathleen Westbrook, and she writes for an outfit called Climate Cosmos. And her essay is titled, Why Some of the World's Top Scientists Are Starting to Push Back on Climate Alarmism. She writes, renowned climate scientist Richard Lindzen's emerged as a vocal critic of the prevailing consensus on climate change. According to Lindzen, the scientific community has not yet reached a full agreement, warns the alarmist perspectives can impede objective scientific discourse. He argues that by labeling climate change as an impending catastrophe, valuable research and debate are stifled. This perspective challenges the mainstream view and encourages scientists to explore alternative theories. Lindzen's critique serves as a reminder that science should be open to questioning and revision.
And the climate change movement is anything but a science-based movement, because it is not subject to, what were your last words there?
What was it? Questioning and revision?
Questioning,
is that the one you were thinking?
Yes, questioning.
She goes on to cite revision. Climatologist John Christie, a Pew Research Center reveals a growing perception of Americans that climate change warnings are exaggerated. A book by a guy named Mike Holm explores the dangers of alarmist narratives. The book is titled Climate Change Isn't Everything, Liberating Climate Politics from Alarmism.
I tell you what, for my more liberal inclined listeners out there, if you doubt that the climate change movement has become untethered to science and is now just driven by ideology, show me, call me and tell me, or text me, one prediction made by the climate change activists, one doomsday prediction they have made that's come true. You know, show me the islands that are now underwater from rising sea levels. You know, show me the massive glacial melt. Show me. Where is the North Pole melting? Show me the catastrophes that we were said were a hallmark of climate change. Show me a prediction they made 10, 15, 20, 30 years ago that's actually come true. In the meantime, the second half of the John Carlson Show is right in front of you. 23 minutes to 8 o'clock on the John Carlson Show. Earlier this hour, I was notifying everyone that the King County Sheriff's Department, which is responsible for law enforcement, protecting the people who live in unincorporated King County, meaning areas of King County that are not incorporated as a city or town, and also responsible for police protection in cities that contract with King County to provide police protection in their cities, like Burien, that King County says they're cutting back on patrols. And then they said which areas they're cutting back, Redmond Ridge and in unincorporated Renton. They say, yeah, we don't want to pay deputies overtime. And, yeah, we'll still get out there for murders and rapes and serious assaults. But if it's just a burglary, you know, it's going to have to wait. It's a low-level priority. Well, the KVI text line certainly lit up when I mentioned this to you. You can always text us your thoughts, your questions, your comments at 206-421-5757. Bob in Portland, who listens to us at KVI.com, where the reception is pitch perfect all the time. He heard the story, and he said, perhaps King County should sell off millions of dollars worth of homeless drug dens that they bought, meaning the hotels, and put that money into the sheriff's department and public safety. There's a thought. Instead of putting millions of dollars into buying hotels and then putting drug users from Seattle, the overwhelming majority of them are from Seattle, and not requiring them to be drug-free, i.e. turning these hotels into drug dens, yeah, maybe put that money into protecting the safety of law-abiding people who live in King County. Mike in Gold Bar said, announcing where your deputy cutbacks are occurring tells thieves exactly where they should go and have less police activity to stop them. Exactly. But keep in mind, what they are trying to do is raise public fear and anxiety so that they can try and ram through a property tax increase in Olympia. That's what their ultimate agenda is, raising taxes in Olympia. Mike in Sammamish said, I retired from King County Sheriff's Office. The county has always placed public safety as a necessary evil. As long as the sheriff was appointed by the county executive, law enforcement was treated as a redheaded stepchild. Past executives wanted to get rid of the sheriff's office like Multnomah County did. They refused to hire new deputies because of the hidden cost, i.e. more jail space and prosecutors, because they would be arresting more criminals for committing crime. That was seen by King County executives as an impediment, as a nuisance. Yeah, if we crack down on crime, that means more arrests. And then, you know, we got to put them on trial and there's an expense. And then they're going to go to the jail and jail. We run the jails. All this stuff costs money. Well, yeah, you're protecting the public. Mike in Sammamish goes on, under an elected sheriff, we at least had a sheriff that would fight the county council. Now the county executive's mouthpiece, which is Sheriff Patty Cole Tyndall, will make a little bit of noise in the media, then go back in her office and hope she doesn't get fired. She won't. She's, again, just someone who faithfully repeats what she's told to say. Under appointed sheriffs, I've actually heard sheriffs tell deputies that unincorporated residents should not expect quick responses from law enforcement because they live in a rural area. Well, there's a good reason for buying a gun. if they're advertising, think about this. If they are advertising less police patrol, they're essentially advising you to buy a firearm to protect your family. Because even if you have, you know, a security system, you know, the lights go on, the alarm goes off, even if you have all that and bad guys know it's going to take 22 minutes for the sheriff's office to get someone out there, that puts time on their side. Of course, you should have protection. Mike in Sammamish concludes, with the county charter change a couple of years ago that put the sheriff's office under the control of the county executive and did away with an elected sheriff, it's no surprise that the county will be cutting service to unincorporated residents for law enforcement assistance. But remember, this same King County bends over backwards to give me everything I would need if I'm a homeless drug addict or if I'm an illegal immigrant in a street gang, an illegal immigrant belonging to a street gang. So correct. So correct. Their major law enforcement priority is in King County is to undermine the enforcement of federal law in taking illegal aliens into custody. Again, the priority being illegal immigrants with crime, either criminal activity in this country or they came into this country with a long rap sheet from their country of origin. That is so correct. Talk about misplaced priorities. All right. While we're talking about dysfunctional government at the local level, let's go over here to Sound Transit. They're over budget again. This is the expansion line to West Seattle from what's called SoDo. SoDo is south of downtown. Think south of the stadiums. It would be about a 4-mile light rail line. It would have three stops, and they are $3 billion short. But not that the line would cost $3 billion. No, no, they're $3 billion short of what it would take to build a 4-mile, three-stop line from south of downtown into West Seattle.
Sound Transit is short by billions of dollars in its effort to expand into West Seattle. At the same time, businesses that will be displaced say the help being offered is too little for them to relocate. Commerce Joel Marino looks at the multiple financial challenges confronting the transit system.
As Sound Transit finalizes plans to run light rail to West Seattle, businesses like Alki Beach Academy are sorting out how they'll keep operating once they're forced to move.
Financial support and resources for displaced small businesses who are tenants is extremely minimal.
Property owners receive fair market value for their land, but Sound Transit also needs to remove 70 businesses to make way for the new route to Alaska Junction. Renters like this Children's Academy say the help they get is currently capped at $50,000 plus moving expenses. Jordan Crawley took his concerns to the Seattle City Council, where Sound Transit was updating its own financial struggles with the $7 billion West Seattle extension.
Demands for labor, materials, equipment, they're driving costs up across the board. Real estate costs continue to rise.
Sound Transit is short about $3 billion and had been counting on federal money that may or may not be approved. So for now, they're searching for other ways to cut costs and be more efficient.
It's going to invariably result in some revised scoping, a deep analysis to discern, what kind of additional cost-saving measures could be taken.
Oh, geez, listen to that word salad. Devised scoping, revised strategies. You're trying to waste billions of dollars. The answer should be no. Now, I happen to have grown up a couple of blocks from the Alaska Junction, and I used to take the number 18 line from West Seattle down along this route south of downtown. You could take the express bus that would take the viaduct at the time into downtown, or you could take the slower line that went along the old Sears Roebuck building, which is now, of course, Starbucks headquarters. Anyway, they want to build a line that will cost at least $7 billion to help people who are already taking the bus. They're already taking the bus. Says, yeah, but they'll get there a little faster. But you know what they do? Instead of comparing how long it takes to get from the Alaska Junction to the south of the stadiums, they are saying, here's what it would take to take a metro bus to Westlake Station. Well, Westlake's on the other side of downtown. So the bottom line on this is that for next to no benefit at all, they want to spend $7 billion. The 520 floating bridge, which carries over 100,000 cars a day, that costs less than $7 billion. And they want to build a light rail line into West Seattle, carrying a small fraction of people who are already taking the bus. It's just unbelievable how stupid this decision is. The only way you could possibly justify this is if you don't care about the money, if money is no object. Well, guess what? It's 2025 and money should be an object. You know why? Because it's your money. It's coming up on 10 minutes to 8 o'clock to Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Still one of my favorite songs of all time, Freebird there, Lynyrd Skynyrd. All right, it is 5 minutes to 8 o'clock. After your 8 o'clock headlines, we're coming back and I am going to give you a secret word. When I give you that word, you text it to 206-421-5757. It's all you have to do. Text one word, only that one word that I give you. When you do that, you're automatically entered into a contest to win $2,025 today. Again, be listening. I'm going to give you that word in just a couple of minutes as the Commute with Carlson cruises into hour number three.
I can proudly proclaim that the golden age of America is upon us.
Are you ready? Ladies and gentlemen, the John Carlson Show, hour number three of the Commute with Carlson, now underway. And you know what happens this portion of the show every day for the next month or so. I'm going to give you a word. When I give you that word, text it to 206-421-5757, and you are automatically entered into the KVI Golden Age giveaway. Every day we have a winner drawn out, $2,025. Just that simple. All you had to do is text a word to be in the contest. So here is your word today. And a quick reminder, it's not a race. And don't do it more than once because it only counts once. It's connected to your phone. So you'll only be counted once. You have until 9 o'clock. So you've got plenty of time to text this word. Here we go. 3, 2, 1. Beat. Beat. Like a drum beat. B-E-A-T. Not like the vegetable that nobody likes. Again, it's B-E-A-T. Donald Trump beat Kamala Harris in the election. Beat Kamala Harris like a drum. B-E-A-T. There you go. Just text it to 206-421-5757. Don't add your name. Don't, you know, say, you know, hey, John, how you doing? Because that will throw the algorithm off or whatever it is that if it sees anything other than that one word, it won't count your entry. That's all you have to do. Enter that 1 4-letter word and you are in. B-E-A-T. Now, if you do want to enter the contest more than once, that's easy enough. You can actually enter 4 times throughout the day because at 11 a.m., they are going to give out another different secret word. And that at 1 p.m., while Lars is on the air, they'll give out another secret word. And then at 4 o'clock, they'll give out another secret word. So those are your 4 chances to win. So best of luck to you. And like I said, don't worry. This isn't the only time we're doing this contest. We're doing it every day of the work week for more than a month. In fact, I won't be here when the contest ends. That's how long it's going to be going on. Okay. We are hearing a lot about America facing a constitutional crisis. A constitutional crisis that we are told is being caused by Donald Trump fighting back, resisting these judges who are ordering him to cancel this or that action that he has handed down. They are correct that we are facing a constitutional crisis, but they're looking at the wrong place. The problem we are having is with judges who are completely out of control and not recognizing any constitutional limit on their jurisdiction or their power. Just to give you a most recent example, last week, a federal district court judge in Washington, D.C. named James Boasberg ordered Donald Trump to stop deporting criminal illegal aliens. Not only that, but after issuing his written ruling, he said from the bench, and if there's any planes in the air right now, I want them turned around and brought back. That didn't happen, by the way. And because those planes that were close to their destination, two of them were out of U.S. airspace and were close to landing in El Salvador, we are told that's a sign of Trump ignoring a judge. That is grounds for impeachment. That shows we're in a dictatorship, et cetera, et cetera. The Attorney General of the United States, Pam Bondi, used to be the Attorney General of the state of Florida, didn't quite see it that way. Here she is yesterday talking to Fox News host Will Cain.
Let's start, from the decision by Judge Boasberg. Tomorrow is your deadline to answer questions. Those questions include the following. What time did the plane take off from U.S. soil? Where did it leave from? What time did it leave U.S. airspace? And what time did it land in a foreign country? You have, I don't know, four, five, six questions the judge wants answers to regarding the details of those flights over the weekend. How will you respond at the Department of Justice?
Well, our lawyers are working on this. We will answer appropriately. But what I will tell you is this judge has no right to ask those questions. You have one unelected federal judge trying to control foreign policies, trying to control the Alien Enemies Act, which they have no business presiding over. And there are 261 reasons why Americans are safer now. That's because those people are out of this country. The judge had no business, no power to do what he did. And Will, he came in on an emergency basis on a Saturday with very, very short notice, if any, to our attorney to run in the courtroom. You know, and this has been a pattern with these liberal judges. You just spoke about that. It's been a pattern with what they've been doing. This judge had no right to do that. They're meddling in foreign affairs. They're meddling in our government. And the question should be, why is a judge trying to protect terrorists who have invaded our country over American citizens? You know, TDA is a terrorist organization. They are organized. They have a government structure within them. They are sending money not only throughout this country to each other, but back to Venezuela.
Okay. That is how out of control this judge is. He rushes into court so he could issue a ruling that clearly the attorneys and their arguments were just formalities. He just wanted to stop Donald Trump. And he didn't stop Donald Trump. And he's likely, if they have halted deportation flights, they're not going to be halted for long. But just the action of this judge is infuriating. Mark Levin, himself an attorney, a pretty good one too, and best-selling author, and has one of the most popular evening shows on cable TV every week on Fox News, was on with Martha McCallum from Fox News, and he lays out the problem that we are facing with these suddenly hyperactive local judges.
600 and some judges at this level. You know, in terms of the Supreme Court, if it's as egregious as you say, what would you expect to hear from them? We know yesterday Justice Roberts weighed in really on behalf of the judge's right to say this, and the process is going to play out. There's a hearing on March 21st. What do you think the Supreme Court should do, if anything?
I would say that John Roberts, who I knew before he was a judge, when we both worked in the Reagan administration, it's time to grow up here, Judge. Think about Justice Rehnquist. What would Justice Rehnquist, the Chief Justice, have done when those four originalists 2 weeks ago, when this case involving another rogue Democrat judge, ordered the President of the United States to spend money on foreign activities? What would Rehnquist have done? Would he have joined the four, or would he have joined the radical three? This is an issue of separation of powers, and if it's not resolved, you basically, in the form of your question, have answered it. How the hell are we going to have 680 individual, unelected federal judges? They're federal district judges, not federal national judges, all sitting there behind their desk with their two or three clerks saying, you know, I don't like this idea, Trump sending this. I don't like this idea, banning trans. I don't like this idea. This is exactly what Locke and Montesquieu and Jefferson and Madison warned. When you have a combination of branches rather than separation of branches, and Scalia did too, you have a tyranny. And I don't care about what John Roberts pronounces from the bench. Do your job, Chief Justice of the United States. Don't get into the political fight. Fix it. Because if you don't fix it, we're going to lose our constitutional construct, or Congress is going to have to figure out some way to fix it. One other thing. The idea, and I've even heard it on my beloved network from some of these former whatevers, that we shouldn't raise our voice. That's our job. This government exists for we the people. It doesn't exist for John Roberts, the judges, Congress, or anybody else. This whole thing was set up for us, to protect us. When these judges are conducting themselves this way, when they're interfering with an election, when they're grabbing, seizing power in front of our eyes, we're all smart. We see it from the executive branch, a president of the United States. He's elected nationally. They're created by Congress. They're not even in the Constitution. They're using a power judicial review that's not even in the Constitution, that was created by the Supreme Court in 1803. They should at least have some level of deference to the President of the United States. And notice one other thing. Compare the number of restraining orders, injunctions, and reversals that Donald Trump has had with the last 10 presidents of the United States.
We just had those up on the board, Mark.
It is grotesque.
Yeah. Here are those numbers. George W. Bush, how many injunctions halting presidential policies, usually executive orders? Six. That was six over 8 years. Barack Obama, 12 over 8 years. Joe Biden, 14. And this was Joe Biden, the brazenly defiant Joe Biden, who boasted that the Supreme Court didn't stop me. I still move forward on student loans. They stopped him from most of the student loan, but he still was boasting about he got some of them through. So six for Bush, 12 for Obama, 14 for Biden. How many for Donald Trump so far in his first 2 months? 15. More injunctions against Donald Trump in 2 months than in Joe Biden in 4 years, and three more than Barack Obama in 8 years. You go back to Donald Trump's first term, 64 injunctions. Some of you might remember the first, at least the first highly publicized Trump executive order that clamped down on travel from countries that were on list of being susceptible to a terrorist compromise, many of the majority Muslim countries. We were told it was a Muslim ban, and you had all these judges, including Judge Robart here in Washington State, and young Attorney General Bob Ferguson boasting of how he stopped Trump. First of all, Judge Robart and Bob Ferguson did not stop Trump. Yeah, there were injunctions by Judge Robart, injunctions from several other judges as well. They failed. Trump's policy was approved once we got to the grown-ups, you know, at the senior levels of the judiciary. And Trump's policy moved forward. We did clamp down on travel from countries that had not been cooperating fully with our government in preventing people with terrorist connections from flying. So my point here is that on most of Donald Trump's executive orders, these judges, you know, including the lesbian activist judge in Washington, D.C., who struck down his ban on transgender surgeries on minors, again, on minors, Trump's going to prevail. He'll prevail on education. He will prevail on sending criminal illegals back to where they're from. But Mark Levin has it right. It is up to the U.S. Supreme Court to get the rest of the judiciary in line. And that's where Justice Roberts has to tell these 600 federal district court judges, no, you don't make national policy. And no, if you don't like what Donald Trump's doing, go ahead and run for office yourself. But you're not in a legislative branch. You're not a would-be president running for the executive branch. You're a judge. Knock it off. Usually, judges could be expected to respect parameters on their authority. For instance, it was over 150 years before a federal district court judge dared issue an injunction against a presidential decree. Again, it was in the 1920s, I believe, when that happened. And now it's happening every other day with this judiciary because liberal activists who are sent to the bench do not respect decorum. They don't respect precedent. They don't respect limits on their authority. They'll do whatever they think they can get away with. So it's time for John Roberts to recognize this and have the Chief Justice lead the Supreme Court in telling the lower courts, no, you don't run American foreign policy. You don't run cabinet policy. So the effect of all this is these judges are not going to prevail, but they're just there to be a nuisance. They're just there to try and delay. And that should not be allowed to occur. It is coming up on 22 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning. Philip J. Vandenberg III standing by patiently. The social media sweeps social media from socialists as the Commute with Carlson continues. Talk Radio 570 KVI. All right, Philip J. Vandenberg III, social media from socialists. What do you got?
Uh-oh, Tim Walz, day two.
Oh, jeez.
On the social media sweep. The social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort.
Hold on, I can bring it out of retirement?
All righty.
Please, Democratic Party, please nominate this man to run in 2028.
Oh, boy, right? Yeah.
Please.
Give him any sort of leadership role in Democratic Party politics.
Oh. I'll keep the button safe.
There you go. So Tim Walz, I don't know what event he was at, speaking to a crowd. He's on stage, and he starts talking about how he's thrilled that the value of Tesla stock is going down.
Saying on my phone, I don't know, some of you know this on the iPhone, they've got that little stock app. I added Tesla to it to give me a little boost during the day. 225 and dropping.
So he's thrilled that Tesla stock is going down.
Says a guy who probably couldn't run a hot dog cart when it comes to business.
Have you heard what the Minnesota State Board of Investment invests in for pension holders and things like that?
I wonder.
People that work for the state of Minnesota, government employees in Minnesota. Well, Bill Malusian at Fox has. Bill Malusian at Fox posted the response to what you just heard Governor Walz say. And he wrote, as Walz gloats about Tesla stock dropping, records from the Minnesota State Board of Investment show that as of last June 30th, 2024, the state of Minnesota owned 1.6 million shares of Tesla in its state retirement funds and 211,000 shares in its non-retirement funds. So this is related to the pension type stuff that the state has obligations to for its employees. He writes, I've reached out to Walz's office to ask if Minnesota still holds Tesla stock or if they've sold it all since then. We'll update when I hear back. But basically, here's Tim Walz cheering for the loss in stock value that would ultimately hurt the very people he represents.
Governor Walz, quit ruining your residents' retirement funds. Quit talking down the stock market.
So just another example of economics from people who don't understand.
He's such a economics. Dork. I mean, just a dork.
Over on The Daily Show.
Thank you for letting him be your running mate. That sealed her fate, Kamala Harris's fate.
Over on The Daily Show, they did a segment or a bit about the attacks on the vandalism and destruction of Tesla vehicles and at some of these Tesla outlets, you know. In one case, it was a South Seattle Soto holding lot in Vegas a couple of days ago. It was something that called the Tesla Collision Center. Listen to the Daily Show anchor go through this. They're going to set it up by playing some various news clips. You're going to hear some of the voices you hear on ABC News as an example. And then listen to how the audience reacts.
They're taking to the streets or the parking lots.
Tonight, the FBI and ATF now investigating multiple cases of possible arson targeting Teslas and Cybertrucks.
This dramatic video shows multiple cars in flames. Police say the attacker used Molotov cocktails. It's the latest in more than a dozen instances of arson and vandalism targeting Tesla.
Tesla Cybertrucks were set on fire in Kansas City, and earlier this month, shots fired at a Tesla dealership in Oregon. Cybertrucks on fire in Seattle.
Wow, you guys like petty acts of domestic terrorism, huh?
So the
and they wonder
Daily
why
Show anchor tries to kind of frame it that way, calls them out, and they
first
respond.
Of all, there's nothing petty about it.
Yeah, it's far beyond petty.
Secondly, they wonder why they lost. They wonder why they lost. This is their side. Not only are they not condemning these acts of terrorism, just, you know, pretend. For you liberals out there, just pretend that cars are being torched in front of abortion clinics.
Yeah.
And that was the predicate for all these attacks. And you'll see real quickly how dangerous this is. But no one is criticizing people who are applauding and laughing about it, which, again, just shows how dysfunctional the left is on this issue.
They're cheering for lawlessness. And for these repercussions on Elon Musk.
They're
and somebody else
cheering violent lawlessness.
Somebody else pointed out if they're upset about, you know, 20,000 government workers losing their job, when they say collective, these people on the Democratic left, they mean themselves. You can't fire 20,000 government workers because that would hurt the economy. That's part of their line of thinking. But you can bankrupt Tesla and potentially have thousands, if not 20,000 equivalent job losses at the company of Tesla.
Yeah, so, they're not going to bankrupt Tesla. Right? In fact, people who sell Tesla stock now would be making a foolish mistake. You don't sell stock when it's low. You buy stock when it's low. You sell stock when it's high. That's the operative rule of how you make money in the market. 31 minutes after 8 o'clock, The Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. We're back, The John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI again. Our contest underway, the Golden Age giveaway. The word of the morning is BEAT, B-E-A-T. When you hear, B-E-A-T, all you need to do to enter the contest is text the word to 206-421-5757. You have until 9 o'clock. You got over 20 minutes. Don't be in a hurry. Don't text and drive. Just text it. Only text it once. Doing it more than once doesn't improve your chances. And don't add anything else like your name or any message. Just the word BEAT, B-E-A-T. Okay, and you're in. And if you do want to enter the contest more than once, be listening at 11. We'll give you a separate word, a new secret word. And at 1 p.m., a third secret word. And 4 o'clock during Ari Hoffman's show, another secret word. Four chances every day. Okay, I love this story. It was the first story I talked about this morning. And I said, you know, before I get off the air, I'm going to bring it up again because it's not getting any coverage in much of the news media. But boy, is this a big deal. You remember the protests against the Dakota Access pipelines several years ago? A company was trying to build a pipeline from North Dakota to Illinois. It's about 1,100 miles, and it's expensive, $3.8 billion. The left tried to stop it. So environmental groups and local Indian tribes got together and started making a series of claims that the company, Energy Transfer, said were false and easily disprovable. They were saying that they didn't consult with the Indian tribes before starting this energy pipeline. That was false. They kept saying it anyway. They said that this posed a threat to the water supply where it passed. Again, not on their reservation, but just near their reservation. That turned out to be a lie as well. Greenpeace, according to the company, played a leading role in a publicity campaign that was aimed at ending the project. Again, this pipeline did not go through the Sioux Indian Tribe reservation. It was just near the reservation. And eventually, they did get the pipeline built, but it cost them an extra $300 million. And normally what happens is the company says, well, all right, you know, they claimed that we were racist. They claimed that we were poisoning their water supply. They made all sorts of accusations. Our equipment was damaged. Our property was vandalized. Some of our employees were attacked. But, hey, we got the pipeline built. Let's just move on. No. They didn't move on. The company, led by Kelsey Warren, sued Greenpeace. Quote, they knew that the things that they were saying about us were inaccurate. Things like we were on Indian property, that we didn't communicate with the Standing Rock Sioux. I mean, just crazy stuff they were saying, and we were greatly harmed by that. They said the company Energy Transfer claimed that Greenpeace carried out this campaign of lies in order to solicit donations, which were used to organize and fund protests against the pipeline. Quote, again, from the CEO, Kelsey Warren, everybody's afraid of these environmental groups and the fear that it may look wrong if you fight back with these people. But what they did to us is wrong, and they're going to pay for it. So they went to court, and a jury just awarded the pipeline company $660 million. The jury that heard the case, that listened to the evidence, actually gave the company more than the actual damages. Obviously, that means there was a punitive award and likely attorney's fees as well. Michael Berger, the executive director of the Sabin Center for Climate Change Law at Columbia University, boy, they've been in the news recently, haven't they? Said the jury's decision is just astounding. One way or another, the effect of a verdict like this, without question, could be to chill speech, to make opponents more reluctant to be vocal in their opposition to major projects. No, no, that's not the lesson. The lesson of this verdict is, yeah, you have the right to speak freely, but if you use your free speech to engage in false speech, and that false speech defames and slanders your opponent, that your false speech costs them money, then you're liable for damages. In other words, free speech carries responsibilities. That's the lesson of this verdict. And up until, you know, it shows how this country is changing. Remember what I say, Operation Pushback, fight back against this stuff. The reason why boys will soon not be competing in girls' sports anywhere in the country in the name of transgender rights is precisely because girls and their parents started pushing back. Perfect example of that, Riley Gaines. The reason why the awful abuse of transgender surgeries on minors is under fire is because of courageous people, some doctors, some who have been involved in the transgender movement who see this as abuse, some who are just courageous people like author J.K. Rowling of the Harry Potter series, because they pushed back, they fought back, said enough of this. Well, now you have companies that recognize that the environmental movement, the green movement, is swimming in money. They got plenty of money. It's one reason the Democrats turned their back on working class people who work in natural resources, mining, and energy, fossil fuel production, distribution, pipelines. One of the key reasons they turned their back on them is the money was on the side of their opponents, the environmentalists. Plus, there's government grant money on the climate change front. So now energy companies and organizations and even citizens who have been defamed by these people, they can now fight back and they can get money doing it. They can have their financial position restored. They can have environmental groups that shrug their shoulders at lying about their opponents. They can make them pay for it. Boy, is this a good trend. Let's see if the next time an energy company wants to do something, and you know, if you oppose it, fine. But if you engage in a campaign of lies and demonization and slander and think that you can just say, oh, free speech, I can say that. Yeah, you can say it. But if you lie about your opponent and they are harmed as a result, you are liable for damages if they sue you and they win. This is a great trend. This is wonderful. The ultimate in Operation Pushback. Pushing back against the left, holding them responsibility, not just for their destructive actions, but also for their destructive words that cross the line into slander, libel, or defamation to the point where people are economically harmed. You're listening to The Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. It is 11 minutes to 9 o'clock. Back in my hour, The John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Earlier this week, Monday night, Israel hit Hamas, the terror group that runs Gaza and attacked Israel on October 7th, 2023. Israel struck Hamas, airstrikes up and down Gaza. Why did this happen? Well, it happened in part because Hamas refused to release any more hostages two and a half weeks after the ceasefire ended. It happened in part because Hamas could have released hostages to extend the ceasefire, but instead choose to not do so, which made war practically inevitable. The president's envoy to the Middle East, Steve Witkoff, offered an incentive to continue the ceasefire. Israel accepted it. Hamas did not. And he finally Mr. Witkoff gave up on Hamas. Says Hamas is making a very bad bet that time is on its side. It is not. They are well aware of the deadline to make a deal. Well, time ran out on Hamas. That is why the strikes continued. But the real reason strikes continued is because President Trump has their back. President Trump made it clear he's had enough of Hamas. He's been sending Israel weapons to retool. He's sending word out to Hamas they're barbarians. And very interesting to note that while Hamas was attacked, previously Hezbollah up north, the other terror group, would also fight against Israel from the north. Not this time. No, they know better. So Israel will continue wiping the floor with Hamas because we, the United States, are standing behind them. The good news continues. It is coming up on 6:56. One more time, you've got 3.5 minutes. The word of the morning for our Golden Age giveaway contest is BEAT, B-E-A-T. Just text that word to 206-421-5757. Best of luck to you. Let's talk again tomorrow.